It is Friday, the 18th of September. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming away, the story of refugees and migrants heading west and north continues its daily drama. We have all the latest for you. The United States is changing the way it will deal with the latest refugee situation.
U.S. officials say they're going to increase the number of Syrians who can come to the United States to 10,000.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins. She'll be here. The Russians are coming, and they have been coming to Syria. The United States wants to talk with them about it. And some U.S. companies are trying to cash in on a papal visit. It's all ahead. Croatian Prime Minister Zoran Milanovic said that his country cannot and will not close its borders, but will redirect migrants to Hungary. Milanovic said that Croatia will no longer register the thousands of migrants entering the country after more than 11,000 crossed into Croatia this week. In an interview on Croatian television Friday, Milanovic said Croatia is a small country, and while migrants are welcome to pass through, the nation simply can't house them all. He said they will get food, water, and medical help, but must keep on traveling. Milanovic promised he will not send government troops to the border, calling the move both unconstitutional and impossible. A spokesman for the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHRC, said Friday that the European Union needs to take collective action in the face of the migrant and refugee crisis. Speaking in the Croatian town of Tovarnik, where thousands of migrants are waiting to board trains, Babar Beloš said that although the UNHCR can help, the morale and legal responsibility to deal with the current migrant situation rest with countries in Europe.
We have responded to humanitarian emergencies within hours. Within 3 days, we can put in place mechanisms for refugee arrivals, registration up to 5.5 million people or 750,000 people. We can empty our warehouses in Dubai, Copenhagen and other places. We know how to do the job, but the responsibility, the moral and legal responsibility here is on the countries in the European Union.
Hungary has defended its border closure by saying it was protecting its territory against the influx of migrants looking for better economic opportunities and not fleeing persecution in their homelands. More than 430,000 migrants seeking a better life, including refugees from Syria and Iraq, have crossed into Europe this year. Migration watchers say nearly 3,000 have died trying to do that. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with Peter Bukart. He's the Emergencies Director for the Human Rights Watch. He is in Serbia after spending several days in Tovarnik.
Well, Mr. Bukart, apparently Croatia says it's having difficulty coping with the influx of migrants and refugees. At the moment, from what when you have been in Croatia, what are conditions like for these people, you know, trying to get into the European Union?
Well, it's quite clear that Croatia was completely overwhelmed yesterday by the approximately 10,000 people who came into Croatia from the Serbian border. I mean, the town where they came into literally is a one-street town, a village, really, and suddenly found itself with 10,000 people camping on its outskirts. Most of those people spent the night there, sleeping outside on the concrete. It was very hot yesterday, nearly 100 degrees. They had no tents or blankets and very little food and water as well. So it was quite a desperate situation. And it's clear that Croatia simply cannot cope with the thousands of people coming across its border now.
Now, I believe I heard that Croatian officials were talking about putting some of the refugees into camps.
Well, you have to understand that we are talking about thousands of people arriving every hour. The Croatian authorities have to do something with them. The Slovenian border, unfortunately, is closed, so many of these people do find themselves trapped here. They simply can't be sleeping outside on the pavement. Many of them are families with young children. They need water and food and shelter, as well as sanitary facilities, and that simply does not exist at this border post. But the Croatian authorities are really struggling with the huge crowds. People have been spending days sometimes out in the heat with very little food and water and no shelter. They're desperate to get on the buses to take them to Zagreb and some of these informal camps. But even at these informal camps near Zagreb, tensions are also running very high. These people just want to move on to Western Europe and find their path blocked again and again, and are very frustrated at this stage.
So at this point, what can be done to help these people, both of the people that are now in Croatia and those who are trying, you know, who are now blocked from getting into Croatia? Where do they go?
Well, I think it's important to understand that between 4,000 and 6,000 people continue to arrive in Greece every day from Turkey. Most of them are people with legitimate asylum claims fleeing the conflicts in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan in particular. And Europe and the rest of the world really need to come up with a plan to allow these people to be treated humanely and to seek asylum in the countries that they wish to seek asylum in. This is not just a problem for the Western Balkans. It really is a problem that all of Europe needs to address. We are talking about a lot of families with very young children trying to bring them to safety and a better life. And we do have an obligation towards them, not just Europe, but also the rest of the world, including the United States and Canada and Australia. They should also do their share in terms of taking in these people fleeing brutal conflict.
Well, I thank you very much, Mr. Bukart, for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
The United States has announced that it will be significantly increasing the number of Syrian refugees who can resettle in the United States during the next fiscal year. But now that plan is coming under some criticism. Joining us is VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins. Pam, what can you tell us about this?
Well, U.S. officials say they're going to increase the number of Syrians who can come to the United States to 10,000, at least 10,000 for the next fiscal year, which begins October 1st. And this is a significant increase. Prior to this, only about 1,700 Syrians had been allowed to resettle in the United States since the start of the Syrian crisis back in 2011. But there is criticism, some from refugee organizations and some from lawmakers who say, considering the scope of the crisis, this number is still way too low. They say something in the neighborhood of 65,000 to 100,000 would be more appropriate. But I spoke to Ann Richard, who is the Assistant Secretary for Population, Refugees and Migration, and she said the U.S. cannot physically move that many people that quickly.
Well, and also there are much greater distances. It's not like somebody who is trying to get into Germany and is maybe a few hundred miles away trying to get in there or even going elsewhere in Western Europe. There's a transatlantic travel here involved. How do they do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is travel involved, and the vetting process for resettling refugees in the United States is quite complicated. It takes 18 to 24 months, and there are a lot of steps involved. One of them is an on-site interview with wherever the refugee is located at that time. There are security checks. There are medical checks. There are classes to help refugees adapt to U.S. life, and this is all before they resettle in the United States. There is a move underway in the Obama administration to look for ways to speed up that process, but do so in a way where it doesn't sacrifice the security component.
And that security component is very important to people in this country, if not worldwide. And that is, of course, with the spread of ISIS in Syria, how many of these people are possibly coming in to do no good?
That has been a big concern. But Ann Richard said, because the U.S. security component, the screening is so rigorous, that actually that has not been a big problem to this point. She said the vast majority of people who are seeking to resettle in the United States, Syrians, are family members. They've lost their homes. They've lost their businesses. And they're just looking for a place to be secure and start over.
Well, there are other efforts. I understand that U.S. officials are considering to help ease this refugee crisis.
Absolutely. This is a big issue for Secretary of State Kerry, who's going to raise the issue with his German counterparts during a trip this weekend to Germany. Germany, of course, has been on the front lines in terms of the refugee crisis. Also, it's going to be a big issue at the upcoming United Nations General Assembly. The Secretary General is going to be chairing a high-level meeting to discuss the issue. They're looking for ways to get in more funding to help with the humanitarian crisis that has resulted from the refugee crisis, and also looking to bring in countries that perhaps have not contributed or have not contributed much to get them to do more to help offset what a lot of the European nations have been doing.
Well, you know, this might or might not bring some congressional criticism. I wonder if that could stand in the way.
That's always a possibility. There seems to be very mixed views on Capitol Hill, not only in terms of the scope of the U.S. response, but also the humanitarian component. Right now, the United States has contributed over $4 billion specifically to the Syrian refugee crisis and is looking for ways to do more.
Pam Dawkins is VOA State Department correspondent. As always, Pam, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, if you are following the U.S. presidential race, and the race is underway, although the election isn't for a long, long time, we had somebody, a reporter friend of mine, who said, thank goodness for Donald Trump, because he's making things interesting. The latest thing, the presidential frontrunner on the Republican side, Donald Trump, is causing controversy yet again, this time for failing to correct a supporter who called President Barack Obama a Muslim and a foreigner yesterday. Joining me here in the studio, social media editor Andrew Palcheski is looking into what's trending, and I take it this is trending.
Oh, absolutely. And the audience member at this rally said, we, quote, we have a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. You know our current president is one. You know he's not even American. And Trump's response to this was, we need this question. So people jumping on him on social media saying he didn't shut down this person and say he was inaccurate. People just saying that this is he's kind of gone off the rails. We keep seeing the clip of John McCain from 2008. People keep mentioning on social media, John McCain was a Republican presidential nominee in 2008, had a similar instance where somebody at a rally said, well, Barack Obama, the Senator Barack Obama is a Muslim and he's not American. And John McCain shut that person right down, said, that's not true. He's an American. He loves this country. So a lot of people comparing Trump to that and kind of comparing his temperament on social media. Now we're adding the conspiracy theories, which is always, when you start to wade into the conspiracy theories on social media, that's where it gets fun. People saying it was a plant, it was somebody affiliated with the Democrats they put in there to say that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, well, it's something to explain it. Meanwhile, Trump's been pretty silent on social media. He hasn't tweeted out since this has happened.
Spokesman did say, however, he didn't hear the part about Muslims.
Well, what they're saying is that Donald Trump didn't hear the full question, otherwise he would have corrected it, but it doesn't keep people from jumping on. Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side calling it a disgrace. Hillary Clinton actually tweeted out and got a few thousand retweets. Said Donald Trump not denouncing false statements about President of the United States and hateful rhetoric about Muslims is disturbing and just plain wrong. Cut it out. So
we'd like to hear what you're saying. How do people tweet to you or whatever?
They can tweet at @VOA_IE, and they can follow along there for the latest news for International Edition.
Andrew Palcheski, once again, our social media editor. Thank you. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Some 3.5 billion light years from Earth, there are two black holes locked together by their gravity and tightly orbiting each other. As their orbits continue to close in, scientists expect that they will join together in less than a million years. The scientists used data about the black hole duo called PG-1302-102 that had been gathered by NASA's Galaxy Evolution Explorer and the Hubble Space Telescope. When the two black holes, a large one and a smaller companion, finally do crash into each other and become one, it's expected to trigger a colossal cosmological blast that will be equivalent to 100 million supernovae. If any of us are still here in a million years, we'll be in for quite a show. The researchers say they have been studying these close-orbiting black holes to get a better understanding of how galaxies and the giant black holes at their centers merge. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You might know or you might have heard that the United States is considering direct talks now with Russia, all in the midst of growing concerns about the Russian military buildup in Syria and the Kremlin's professed willingness to send combat units to the Middle East nation. Secretary of State John Kerry and President Obama believe reportedly that such discussions with Moscow are important as the U.S. and its allies seek to revolve the worsening crisis in Syria and the flood of refugees from that civil war are now flooding Europe. Now, Russia's unrelenting military buildup in Syria is worrying that U.S. defense and intelligence officials. The Russians have also sent in more troops, building on the 200 naval infantrymen sent to Syria last week. And Moscow has flown in additional modular housing units, enough for about 2,000 soldiers, suggesting an even greater Russian military presence may be on the way. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said we would warn them against doubling down on their support for the Assad regime, and he described these developments as a losing bet for Russia and a losing bet for Syria. However, International Edition senior Middle East reporter Mohammed Al-Shanawi followed different assessments of the Russian military buildup in Syria. And Mohammed joins us now in studio. Mohammed, you followed a congressional hearing at the Senate Armed Services Committee. What was the general sense you got from that?
Ira, for Senator John McCain, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, the Obama administration's foreign policy has allowed Russia to bolster its military in Syria. He told the committee that such policy emboldened U.S. adversaries and diminished its standing in the world.
Into this vacuum has now stepped Vladimir Putin. As in Ukraine and elsewhere, he perceives the administration's inaction and caution as weakness, and he is taking advantage. According to media reports, Putin has deployed strike aircraft, T-90 tanks, howitzers, armored personnel carriers, Russian Marines, and housing for up to 1,500 personnel in military bases in western Syria. This is an expansion of Russian power in the Middle East that we have not seen in four decades. And it will allow Putin to further prop up Assad, fuel his indiscriminate killing machine, play kingmaker in any of transition, undermine U.S. goals, policy, and operations.
Senator McCain said, while such Russian military buildup will prolong the Syrian conflict and widen the refugee crisis, the main beneficiary will be the Islamic State group.
However, Mohammed, what the Russians are doing isn't particularly new. They've done it before. They've been giving military aid to the Syrian government throughout this conflict, haven't they?
That's true, Ira, but according to former U.S. Ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, what's new and different now is that the Russians are increasing the aid in terms of the scale and the speed at which they are sending it. Ambassador Ford offered some recommendations that he thinks the president and the administration need to do.
Number one, they need to tell the Russians we want a political negotiation, but a serious political negotiation, not a sham negotiation, and not a negotiation for cosmetic changes to the brutal Assad government. And second, in order to get Assad to negotiate seriously, and he has refused to negotiate seriously, you've got to keep the military pressure on him.
Ambassador Ford said, in this war, the Syrian moderate opposition needs enough military assistance to pressure Assad to negotiate a political transition.
Mohammed, thanks again for keeping an eye on all these different angles and perspectives on developments in Syria and what's happening as far as Russia and Syria are concerned.
Thank you, Ira.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Pope Francis will visit the United States next week. The visit has given the tourism industry in New York and Philadelphia, here in Washington, where events are expected to draw over 1 million visitors, some marketing ideas. In one New York Italian neighborhood, it is the face of the Pope himself that's generating profits and satisfying customers. More now from Ramon Taylor.
Welcome to Belmont, the Little Italy of the Bronx, New York, and home to Artuso Pastry, a bakery and cafe that is gearing up for Pope Francis' visit with a special edition dessert. Traditionally known as the black and white cookie, a signature New York shortbread pastry with chocolate and vanilla icing, the family-owned business came up with the idea for a papal variation during Pope Benedict's visit in 2008. Atop the cookie, the vanilla icing becomes a tasty paste for edible paper, printed with edible color ink, featuring Pope Francis' face. The bakery's manager says some Catholics are afraid to eat it.
Some of them want to frame it. Some of them want to freeze it. Some people are afraid to eat it. They think it's a sin to eat it. And some people are the complete opposite, and they think it's a blessing to eat it and miracles might come from it.
At $2.95 a piece, sales have rocketed. Baker Sergio Hernandez says making them is a source of pride.
As a Catholic, it gives me joy to place the image of the Pope on a cookie. I'm proud to be one of the people that's doing this.
But not everyone is sold. Doris Murray, a loyal client at the bakery and fan of Pope Francis, thinks it's all a gimmick.
This whole cookie situation, or the pictures, or give your money to an organization that he advocates for and believes in.
For the bakery's manager, it's about creating a satisfying experience. Her goal is for Pope Francis to try his cookie for himself. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
An audacious militant assault on an Air Force base in northwestern Pakistan Friday left at least 29 people dead, as many wounded at least. Ayaz Ghul has more from Islamabad.
Authorities say heavily armed militants in paramilitary forces uniforms staged the attack on Badabir base near the city of Peshawar. Army spokesman Major General Asim Bajwa says the assailants stormed the main gate just before dawn.
They got there, and then they used rocket launcher and grenade, and they just burst the gate.
He says some of the attackers stormed a mosque near the gate and lobbed grenades on worshippers before spraying them with bullets, killing 16 people. The militants then entered an adjacent block to kill several other people before being surrounded and killed by what officials called the Quick Reaction Force. Several security personnel were killed in the shootout with militants, while many others were wounded. General Bajwa alleged that the terrorist attack was planned in Afghanistan and those involved in it came from across the border. The outlawed Pakistani Taliban claimed responsibility for the violence. It says the attack was meant to avenge counter-terrorism operations Pakistan's military has undertaken against the group's strongholds and fighters. A spokesman for the militant outfit later emailed a video to VOA showing 16 men being seen off by their supervisor, saying they are the suicide bombers who took part in the assault on the airbase. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
And that's International Edition for this Friday. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and South Korea continue to share an increasingly dynamic partnership that includes military, economic, and development issues. The close ties, said Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Daniel Russell, are important because of the challenges and opportunities in front of us. The U.S.-South Korea alliance, forged in war, built on trust, and tested repeatedly, is stronger than ever, said Assistant Secretary Russell. This military alliance will only grow stronger as each country invests in its armed forces and joint capabilities on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S., South Korea, and its allies have shown North Korea that a brighter future is possible if it chooses a different path, one without nuclear weapons and destabilizing provocations. Due to its self-imposed isolation, North Korea has cut itself off from prosperity, and the dynamism of Northeast Asia has passed it by. South Korea, on the other hand, is leading the way economically in the region. South Korea has become the United States' sixth largest trading partner. By 2017, nearly 95% of consumer and industrial products will be duty-free under the United States Free Trade Agreement with South Korea. Bilateral investment has also grown steadily. In 1996, Samsung opened what is now one of the most advanced semiconductor fabrication plants in the world in Austin, Texas. All told, Samsung supports over 4,000 jobs in Austin, and they're still expanding. Meanwhile, General Motors is the largest U.S. investor in Korea, making a fifth of its global production there. Both countries must remain resolute in the fight against terrorism, said Assistant Secretary Russell. South Korea is a member of the Counter-ISIL Coalition and its Foreign Terrorist Fighters Working Group. It was among the first to commit $1 million to a UN Development Program stabilization project in areas liberated from ISIL in Iraq. On the issues of global development and fighting epidemic diseases, South Korea has just agreed to spend $100 million over the next 5 years to help 13 countries fight against infectious diseases. The U.S. looks forward to working with South Korea as it continues to develop its role as a regional military and